Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center. Thank you to our sponsor, Humboldt Distillery. Their delicious organic distilled spirits are available in your local grocer. And thank you to Dandars Board Games and Books. If you're looking for some summer fun, go pick up a board game from Dandars, located in Arcata. And I'm joined by my friend and Executive Director of Friends of the Eel River, Alicia Heyman. Hey, Alicia.
Hi, Tom.
And we're also joined by the Director of the Redwood Coast Energy Authority and our special guest for this show, Matthew Marshall. Hey, Matthew.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to be talking about offshore wind today, which I think is a pretty exciting subject for most of our listener base. And it is still going on. We're still making progress. And this is going to be an update, a progress report on where we are in this process. So first, let's clarify what we're talking about here, Matthew. What are we talking about when we're talking about offshore wind?
Yeah, so in this context, we're talking about offshore wind energy, which is wind farms off the coast of, in this case, Humboldt. And in our local context, that actually means using floating foundations because our water gets pretty deep off the coast here on the north coast compared to Europe and the East Coast, where they do foundations that are actually like built on the seafloor. The technology to do those floating foundations is now being deployed in Europe and other parts of the world. So it's not science fiction. It's a real thing. It exists. You can go take a boat out and see it in Portugal and Scotland. But it's an exciting opportunity because Northern California and Southern Oregon have some of the best offshore wind resource, or just wind resource period, in the entire United States. And so there's a tremendous potential to generate renewable power with offshore wind in our region. And the advances over the last 10 years or so of technology mean that's actually a technical possibility to do that.
And so these are big honkers too, right? These are some of the largest potential wind turbines that are being manufactured today. What size are we looking at, and how far out on the ocean are these going to be?
Yeah, so they're gigantic, is I believe the technical term. When you do onshore wind, you're constrained by having to move things around roads or even on train cars. You know, whereas because there's not the sort of physical constraints when you're moving things around by barge out in the sea, you can do much larger turbines, which means more efficiency, fewer turbines, more output, and so it's a good thing from a resource standpoint, and you're getting by with many fewer turbines. For example, the TerraGen project that didn't happen in Humboldt, that scale project, I think, had about 60 or so proposed turbines for onshore. You'd only need about 10 turbines offshore because they're larger and more efficient. And they're like 600 or feet or taller. So one of the reasons why Humboldt Bay is actually an exciting potential for sort of the supply chain and actually providing service and potentially assembly and manufacturing of these kinds of units is because of that height, in that when you're doing these floating foundations, you actually put it together in the harbor and then tow it out fully assembled in vertical fashion, and they won't fit under the Golden Gate Bridge. They're like as tall as the Golden Gate Bridge, like the top of the Golden Gate Bridge, not like the deck that you drive on. And so people say, oh, aren't they just going to do this in San Francisco Bay? And it's like, no, it's technically not possible because of the vertical draft of moving these in and out. We don't have any bridges or anything to get out of Humboldt Bay. And so that's why there's local interest, but the state and the federal government see the potential for Humboldt Bay to really be a hub for offshore wind.
That'll be quite the spectator event to watch those turbines getting dragged out to sea.
Yeah, Supervisor Mike Wilson came up with a great, he said, we're going to be the Cape Canaveral of offshore wind, and that it's like thinking about something that's two or three times the height of the Samoa pulp mill smokestack, and those floating out the bay and heading out to sea will definitely be an interesting sight.
So you've touched on two reasons why people have been excited about offshore wind here. One, we have a great capacity to generate offshore wind because we have a ton of it. We have a wonderful wind resource. It blows really, really, really hard off our coast. Yeah, that's right. What way of putting it? And then also there is the construction jobs associated with offshore wind. And so we might be able to have Humboldt County become the hub for floating offshore wind on the entire West Coast, because we have the port infrastructure that is necessary, or we could have the port infrastructure that would be necessary to construct and get these out to sea. So I think a lot of people see this as an economic opportunity for Humboldt County, an opportunity to build the Green New Deal economy that we're all so excited about, to have these good blue-collar jobs that are family wage jobs in the construction and the manufacture and servicing of these offshore wind turbines. But it's still off on the horizon, this possibility. And I am having you on here to talk about the next steps, or where we are now in the process of getting these wind turbines off of our coast. So the Redwood Coast Energy Authority, for full disclosure, you are interested in being a potential part owner in some of these offshore wind turbines. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so it's, as I said before, you know, the resource has been there. And then as the technology became ready for commercialization, and then the state actually started getting interested in that because developers started getting interested. So I think actually the primarily European-based companies that are in the offshore wind business started coming to California before I think California really expected them. And you know, it was sort of like, oh, we better start working on this. But as we started to see that developer interest, we wanted to be proactive about it and not just sort of wait for developers to come and hope that they were good partners to the community. And so in early 2018, we actually issued a request for qualifications for basically an offshore wind development partner or team of partners, with the intent of saying, hey, you know, we've got this resource. We really want to see it developed in a way that's respectful of our community values and really bringing benefits to the community and really has the community with a seat at the table in the decision-making process. And if you're interested in that kind of public-private partnership model, please respond, because conversely, we don't have the financial or technical capabilities to develop a project like that locally. And then we actually got a very strong response from a number of companies that work internationally and have operating wind farms around the world. And so that was a pretty significant sign of industry interest. We ended up picking a team of companies out of that process to work with. One's based out of Portugal, although they do renewable energy projects around the world, and then another out of Norway. And working with those two, there had not been any activity in Humboldt as far as at the federal level. And I guess to take a step back, that the leasing of federal waters is managed by the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, which is in the Department of Interior. And so anything in federal waters 3 miles out or beyond is managed by BOEM. And they have a specific process for wind leasing. They had not begun that up here or really in California. They do have an option where you can sort of propose your own lease area. And so that's what we did back in 2018, because they hadn't identified anything up here. They hadn't really started. So we started working on that with this team of partners, say, let's propose a project. Let's propose a lease area. Subsequently, that got sort of absorbed into their statewide California process. And they did what's called like a call area, a call for information and nominations of competitive interest. So they sort of made a formal BOEM process. Okay, we're gonna go through our sort of typical sequence for leasing, both on the North Coast as well as on the Central Coast. And so that original proposal that we put together kind of got, again, absorbed into that humble call area they identified. And that's where we've been.
So these call areas, these are geographic areas off the coast that they've identified as having the wind resources that could be exploited or utilized by a wind farm. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. It's the Humboldt call area is about 20 to 30 miles off of the coast from Eureka. And they look at sort of the technical feasibility of what's the water depth and where could you do a project, generally pushing them farther out to shore to minimize view impacts. And also that minimizes, doesn't eliminate, but it minimizes wildlife impacts, commercial fishing impacts. And so that first pass is sort of like it's like a study area. They say, okay, here's an area. Let's see if there's interest from developers. Let's start sort of analyzing that area. And then the next step in their process is they take that call area and then they identify what they would call like a wind energy area, like an actual area to lease that can be within that area. It can't be bigger. So it might be the whole area. It might be a narrowed down section if they've kind of done input and analysis says, hey, actually, this corner of the area is no good or whatever. And then they go through an environmental review of that wind energy area. Not a review of like building a project there, but of just leasing it. So there's that's one thing to, and that's a step that's about to happen. And then ultimately, they'll carve up some section of that original area into one or more lease blocks, and then they auction them off in a competitive auction to developers. And again, that doesn't give a developer like the right to build a project. It's basically just sort of site control. And then developers go through a site analysis and permitting process, and then have to have basically that's where you get to the stage where there's actually the environmental review of a specific proposed project that may lead to development. So there's a lot of years in that process, but it's important to know that, you know, that sort of lease auction is really kind of the beginning of the real kind of permitting, not the end.
So at this early stage in the process, is there a goal or a range of the scale of energy that they're proposing to generate, or does that come later when the projects are more defined?
Yeah, so there's sort of a technical potential of the area that's been identified. And what's been going on between 2018 when we started and now has been a bogged down sort of slow process, primarily due to on the Central Coast, they were trying to move forward with the Central Coast of California down near Morro Bay and Humboldt at the same time. And they had there's a lot of Department of Defense activity down in that area, where they do testing and training and all the stuff. And so they had a couple proposed colonies down there. The Department of Defense said, no way, no how. And then they said, well, what about this like really small area? And then developers said, well, that's not even commercially viable. And so there was a bunch of back and forth that didn't really have anything to do with us, but that's why nothing's really happened these last few years in Humboldt. Just earlier this year, they basically have kind of, under the new administration, resolved those issues with the Department of Defense and kind of adjusted the Central Coast area to the satisfaction of both the Department of Defense and the industry and BOEM and everyone else. And nothing really changed for Humboldt. And so they've announced that they're going to move forward with that next step of the process going forward with finalizing the wind energy areas and the lease areas, with the goal of having the actual auction sometime in mid-2022 is their target. And as far as the potential, though, so right now the call area off of Humboldt is a couple hundred square miles. It's pretty big, and that could host a pretty large scale of development, much more power than we use in Humboldt County. So
hundreds of wind turbines.
Yeah, so it could be, you know, several hundred wind turbines and a pretty significant chunk of power for the state. That's not going to happen right away, and it can't happen right away because the transmission grid in and out of Humboldt County is pretty small. It's really designed to kind of, it's not even big enough to really like import enough power to meet our local energy loads. That's why we have to have the natural gas plant currently to basically fill in the gaps of what can be imported. So we're pretty dependent on local generation. And so to some extent, offshore wind is a great opportunity because we can displace our reliance on fossil fuels by getting that onto the grid. But there's a big jump between that sort of Humboldt scale project that will likely happen first. And that's what we've really been focused on at RCEA and any kind of future expansion, because it's not like, I use the analogy, you know, people sometimes think like, oh, you guys are proposing to do 10 to 15 turbines, kind of a Humboldt scale project, that the output of that would be comparable to like the PG&E plant in Eureka. It's like, well, is that just the camel's nose under the tent? And now it's going to be hundreds of turbines if we say yes to this. And whether you want to say yes to 100 turbines or you want to say no, the tent is only big enough for the nose right now. It's like you need to build a whole nother tent, because that transmission upgrade process would have to happen. And that would be like a multi-billion dollar investment. Right. And so getting beyond that sort of 10 to 15 turbine scale really is going to have to be like a state level of investment to develop that full resource. So that's where in the near term, in the next 5 or so years, the hope is to get that 10 to 15 turbine commercial demonstration kind of scale project, community scale project done. But whether that second round ever happens will be
So that potential exists, though, for Humboldt to, you know, with some transmission upgrades, for Humboldt to really be a leader in green energy across the state.
Yeah, you know, just as we've seen, like sort of in the Southern California and the Southern Central Valley, the solar development there has just become a huge part of the power mix in California and the West. The sunny part, but our wind resource is comparable, both Northern California and Southern Oregon. And it's a great compliment. That's one of the reasons why the state and others are really interested, because the wind blows pretty consistently all the time. It actually picks up in the evening when the sun goes down. And so it's a great compliment to California's abundant solar energy generation.
The Eco News Report, Matthew Marshall from the Redwood Coast Energy Authority is here to talk about floating offshore wind farms off of Humboldt County's coast. So while we think that the first initial project will be kind of Humboldt sized, right? So 10 to 15 wind turbines producing somewhere around, 150 megawatts of power. The lease bid process doesn't necessarily mean that a company won't come in and bid for some other larger area with the hope that in the future there will be infrastructure upgrades to our power grid that would allow for a larger project.
Yeah, if I was going to place a bet, I would say that they're probably going to keep the area of Humboldt about the same size that's been identified now, which is, again, a couple hundred square miles, and that they'll probably split it into two separate lease blocks, maybe three. And so you'll have folks bid on that. But to some extent, it'll be sort of a speculative bid in that it's like, well, we think this might happen eventually because there's a lot of state interest. But let's say you have two developers that get those leases. Hopefully one will be the team that we're working with. And even in that case, that'll be this sort of smaller scale project would not use that whole lease area. There'd be a technical potential for a second phase if the transmission gets built. But I don't think there's just going to be like, oh, these two developers got it, and then they're off to the races building hundreds of turbines because of those transmission constraints. So there will probably be more area leased than will be initially able to be developed. The Central Coast will be different because they have the transmission near that area. And so they'll probably be actually bigger projects down there. If I was going to this takes off my second round of crystal ball gazing, I'd say our 10 to 15 turbine first in California out of this BOEM process, and there'll probably be larger full commercial scale projects down in the Central Coast that'll come online. And then if the state and the industry and the energy industry sees it's making sense and it's paying off, then that's when we'll see the potential for transmission upgrade and more development in Southern Oregon and Northern California.
So Matthew, you mentioned before potential impacts to commercial fishing, and I understand that RCAA has a memorandum of understanding with Humboldt Fishermen's Marketing Association. Can you talk a little bit about that and potential impacts to commercial fishing?
Yeah, so if you look 20, 30 miles off the coast, as far as what are the direct impacts of the actual farm itself, there's obviously wildlife wherever you go. So that's something that has to be addressed and considered, particularly for any kind of large scale project. But as far as human users of that part of the ocean, it's generally commercial fishermen. In Southern California, they've got the military, but up here, it's really commercial fishing. And so that's an area where we wanted to be proactive in making sure that we address local fishermen's concerns in the process and really involve them in the process. Because I think sometimes there's been situations where they're kind of last to hear about things and kind of end up on the defense. And so early on, back in I think it was in 2018 or 2019, we entered into an MOU to say, hey, let's try to make this work and you know, work together. We want to see offshore wind. We also want to support our fishing industry. And so we've been working with them over the last couple of years to hopefully develop a mitigation management agreement to coexist out in the ocean. And hopefully, you know, one of our goals for RCA is to have something that can kind of be scalable. So we've been working mostly with the Humboldt Fishermen Marketing Association. They don't represent everybody. So this would be something that wouldn't be specific to their members or their group. And also the idea is to have something scalable. So even if we're kind of focused on coming to an agreement about the 10 to 15 turbine project that we're looking at, having something that could then, if there's other future phases, could scale up as far as the structure of if there's lost gear or displacement of fishing and having something that's kind of not just paying off who's fishing today and saying, well, here's some money, go away, but having something that's kind of supporting the long-term sustainability of the industry.
So we've talked a little bit about the potential environmental impacts from this project. There's going to be other associated development for this project as well in Humboldt Bay itself. So I think Jen Kalt of Humboldt Bay Keeper, one of our usual folks and co-hosts of this show, would be angry at me if I didn't ask about the kind of infrastructure development necessary in Humboldt Bay to facilitate the construction of these wind turbines. So what's going to be necessary in terms of improvements to our bay port system to build these wind turbines?
Yeah, so you know that's probably the thing that people will actually see. 20, 30 miles out is pretty far, and so unless you're out there fishing, it's going to be pretty remote. But the activity in the harbor is going to obviously be much closer to home. We talked about the fact that there's a lot of potential for Humboldt Bay, and it's positioned great as far as on the middle of the West Coast to not just serve potential projects off of Humboldt, but to serve Southern California or Central California and serve Oregon. And so there's a lot of excitement. Our harbor infrastructure is, as you guys know, ripe for upgrade, which is a nice way of saying it's pretty derelict, and it's not currently sufficient. So the weight bearing requirements for a dock that's riding assembly for offshore wind has to be pretty strong. And so it will take rebuilding some of our currently deteriorating dock infrastructure. That's not an RCEA job, that's a Harbor District job, but they are also actively working on that. And the current focus is on Redmond Marine Terminal 1, which is the one closest to the Samoa Bridge, kind of just below the Samoa Cookhouse. And it's got a pretty big footprint from the original dock, which is a wood dock that's got a lot of holes in it right now. And so this would be, you know, basically rebuilding that dock, which is in itself a multi-million dollar project, although the state budget that just got approved has a little line in there that says Humboldt Bay Offshore Wind Harbor Development, $11 million. And it's so the state specifically carved out funding for that dock improvement, and with the goal of providing that $11 million so that the Harbor District can apply for some federal funding that's available to the Department of Transportation, which I think could be up to $56 million or so. And so when the state said, how do we help Humboldt? And they said, well, there's this federal funding, but you need match dollars. And they're like, well, how much match do you need? And it's like, well, if you want us to get the full 56, it'd be $11 million. And they're like, here's a check. You know, and I was like, whoa, okay, these guys are serious. Obviously, part of that's the surplus at the state budget level was good timing. But so the state threw down that match funding, which I think just shows the level of interest in Humboldt Bay being a hub for this industry. And so knock on wood as far as all of that coming through. And because obviously if we want to have the jobs for the assembly and service be here, you got to build the harbor facilities first before you start doing the wind work. And so, and I think that's the other area where looking at environmental impacts or even commercial fishing impacts or community impacts, that's something where we'll really want to focus probably on making sure that things are done right. Obviously, that's the ancestral territory of the Wiat tribe. And it's like, let's not have a bunch of noisy crane work going on in the middle of the world renewal ceremony and things like that. And so, you know, I think being mindful of those kind of harbor impacts, which won't be like the dock will be permanent, but it'll be an active harbor site. And so making sure that that's done right will be important.
Can you talk about RCEA's relationship with the Wiat tribe over offshore wind energy development? What conversations have been had and what are ongoing with the tribe on this project?
Yeah, so back when we started in 2018 and we were kind of going through our own sort of process to submit that like unsolicited lease request proposed area, one of the first things we did was reach out to local tribes because again, we wanted to have involvement in the process, and we actually had tribal representation on the review group as well as environmental organizations and economic development and commercial fishermen when we were picking those developers. So it's like, oh, instead of the developer picking Humboldt, let's have the community as best we can pick the developer that we want to work with. And so on our original unsolicited lease request, we actually had a letter of support from the Wiat tribe saying, hey, you know, we appreciate the process that RCA went through in engaging the community and getting our input on the area that we proposed, which is basically the same as what the Boehm call area turned into. And so that's not to say that our work here is done because they gave us a letter of support in 2018. I think it needs to be ongoing. There's been a lull because they're like we've been just sort of waiting for this next step of the Boehm process to pick up again. And so I think that's one of our starting this summer now that things are moving again. We're going to be picking that back up. And I don't want to speak for the tribe to say what they compared to what they provided in their letter back then. But I will also say that the federal process and the state process has obviously an intergovernmental, you've got an intergovernmental task force, and tribes are very much a part of that, and they've got tribal engagement activities. So there's what we do as RCEA and the local development piece. And then there's obviously the federal process that has a very formal engagement with local tribes as well. So
the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, BOEM, as we've said throughout the show, just as a reminder, that's what that term is. They've been having these stakeholder listening sessions online. And one thing that's been challenging is they're often during the day, or they're 8 hours long. How can somebody who is interested in offshore wind energy development off of Humboldt County's coast, how can they participate in these early meetings, these early stakeholder engagement, if they work a normal job and can't attend these long meetings?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think another question is, like, when's the right time to engage, depending on what your interest is? I think there is going to be, like I said, an environmental review before the lease auction. But that's really just saying, what's going to be the impact of having the lease auction held? And so it means, like, oh, there might be some data collection activities. It's pretty minimal. The environmental process for actually the project that might go there is after that lease process. So it seems a little backwards sometimes that it's like, oh, there's this whole thing. People spend all this money to get these leases. And then they start actually studying to see what's feasible. But it is what it is. And so I think there's going to be a lot more happening after that lease happens. I think in the interim, if folks want to kind of understand the lay of the land of just like what, not so much the BOEM process, although that's part of it, but the potential and the technology and potential environmental impacts, economic benefits, the pros and cons. The Schatz Energy Research Center led a team of different entities on developing a number of studies that were funded by the state and federal government last year. And there's the reports that came out of that, but there's also, they did a series of webinars, which were virtual because of the times we're in, and those are recorded and available. And those are a little bit more digestible. And obviously they're recorded so you can watch them whenever you feel like it. And so if somebody wanted to kind of like get up to speed on like the big picture, those Schatz Center webinars are a pretty good resource that you can do on your own time.
And we'll link to them in the show notes, which are available on the LostCoastOutpost.com.
Yeah. And then I would say we're going to start ramping back up. We had a bunch of meetings back in 2018. And at some point it was like, well, we don't have anything to update. We don't have anything to update. So it's like, let's not waste people's time with meetings with nothing new. And so I think we will be starting to kind of revitalize our own efforts to keep people informed. And so, you know, I think stay tuned for more opportunities to hear about this. But as you know, an 8-hour federal state task force meeting is probably a little bit more than most people want to hear. So I think programs like this and hopefully getting some word out as things start to develop and keep people informed in local media and have workshops where people can have input. And I know there'll be federal workshops, but I think one of the things we'll be focused on, like you said, is making sure that it's accessible to people, not just people whose job it is to be engaging on this stuff.
A shout out to the people whose job it is to engage on this stuff. So Matthew, thank you to RCEA for all your work on this. And I would also encourage people to go to humboldtbaykeeper.org. Go to humboldtbaykeeper.org to find out more information from Humboldt Baykeeper and Jen Kalt.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah,
thank you, Alicia.
Thanks, Matthew.
All right, thanks.
Bye, friends. This was another episode of the Eco News Report. Join us again on this time and channel next week for more environmental news from the North Coast of California.